Hello, friends and neighbors, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. This is edition number 114. Today is Friday, December 5th, 2024, a bitter cold but sunny morning here in Music City, USA. On these frosty mornings, we frequently wake up to see that our bird bath, just a few steps from our front porch, is frozen solid. Lately, my routine has been to dump out the ice and pour in a pail of hot water. It is truly amazing how quickly the birds find this water source and the variety of birds which it attracts. Thanks, as always, to my buddy Ron Trammell for our noteworthy bumper music. In conversation with a young neighbor yesterday, I mentioned today's interview, and she remarked, "Mark, you get to meet such interesting people." And yes, she's right. I am indeed fortunate and thankful to be able to share the fine people I meet with others. Today's guest, Joanna Brichetto, is back to visit us again upon the occasion of her new book, This Is How a Robin Drinks, subtitled Essays on Urban Nature. Jo is the producer of the popular Instagram page called Sidewalk Nature. Jo is also involved with a handful of Tennessee natural resource conservation organizations. Today we talk about her book and her interest in the natural world. We talk about her special interest in hackberry trees. And also embedded within this interview is a special learning opportunity for local park and recreation managers. We touch on how the management practices in local parks can affect the observable natural events in local parks with the example of the Nashville mustard. And so I hope you will enjoy this return visit with Jo Brichetto. And we will get started right after this brief message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish six beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
Jo Brichetto, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I should say welcome back. It was September of 2022 that you were last here visiting with us.
That's right.
We had a great time then. And I remember in the picture that's included in the archives of that podcast has you with an assemblage of things that you brought in a box to use as demonstrations.
Right. I try to never go anywhere without a show and tell.
Jo, it's great to have you back. And the occasion for you coming back is a celebration in its own right. At the time that we last talked, you did tell me that you were working on a book. And I made a mental note that we would have you back when that book came out. And lo and behold, it's out.
Finally, yes. Thank
it's
you.
Out. How This Is How a Robin Drinks is the name of your new book, just out this fall. I guess at the end of September it came out.
That's right.
And it's been well received.
I think so. It's been pretty great so far.
Well, let's talk about your book, and then we'll get off onto lots of other little topics that you and I share an interest in.
Okay.
This book was some time in development.
Oh yeah, years and years.
Well, tell us.
Well, maybe 10 years ago, I started writing short essays. Started putting them out in the world. And, oh, I should back up. I've kept a journal my entire life. So anything I write about started its life as a journal entry. So I've been writing privately for a very long time, but trying to get essays out, it's really only been the last 10 years. And the book is a collection of 52 essays. About 15 of those have already seen the light of day in some sort of literary journal, but they've been heavily revised for this book. And maybe three or four were from my website, Sidewalk Nature. Again, those are revised, but the rest are brand new. And they're all arranged by season, and they're all about my nearest nature. So that's going to be my home and neighborhood, school, sidewalks. It's going to be my favorite metro parks, but also some state natural areas. It's all urban nature.
And your goal, I take it, and I loved the book. Enjoyed it so much.
Oh, thanks.
Your goal is to cause people to think about what they see every day.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's all about getting outside and looking around. Everything starts with looking around.
Right. You bring special attention to some of the things that we see every day in Nashville. For instance, the hackberry tree. That comes up several times in the book, the hackberry tree.
I did one of those. I did the whole document in one thing and did a search for how many times I said hackberry and hackberries. And I forget, it's a number. I have trouble with numbers, but it was something like 263 times those words were mentioned. Right. And speaking of show and tells, I brought you a little Ziploc baggie of hackberry droops today.
Just to show it off.
And I forgot, I left it in my purse, but that's my show and tell today.
Can't wait to see that.
And book number two is about the hackberry tree.
That's coming up.
Yeah, I'm almost finished.
Goodness. Really?
Yeah.
My goodness. And you're going to, so soon. But you've been working on it at the same time.
Oh, I'm a slow worker, yeah. I've been working on this for a long time.
Well, just using the hackberry as an example, you know, why should we care about hackberries?
Well, we as Middle Tennesseans, right. Why we should care is because this is our tree. This is the most common tree we've got.
Wait a second. I was told that Yankees brought them into Tennessee.
Oh, I love that story. Yeah, they're from the horse droppings
exactly.
And the hooves and whatnot.
Right.
Well, who knows? That could be true, but Middle Tennessee is right there in the heart of, it's the overlap of the northern hackberry and the southern hackberry. And we've also got,
I didn't know that there was a northern hackberry.
So northern is Celtis occidentalis, and southern is Celtis levigata, smooth, like the leaves are smoother,
okay.
They're not as toothed. And in our lovely cedar glades, we've got the dwarf hackberry. So we've got three different species, and they mix and mingle in each other's genetic pools.
Okay.
So we've got this swarm of all kinds of hackberries here that just love this central basin. They're like a succession tree for us. Wherever we take down anything, up come the hackberries.
And they support wildlife like crazy.
In a major, major way. Right. Like we think, oh, the berries, the birds love the berries. Well, yeah, but and our winter birds wouldn't survive without them. Those in the eastern red cedar fruit, I think, keep our birds alive all winter. But almost everything with a mouth eats a hackberry, what's on the outside or what's on the inside, or they eat the leaves or any part of that tree. It's amazing the faunal associations with this one tree.
Well, folks that are listening, you should get this book if for no other reason than to read about the hackberry and all the wildlife it supports. And I guess specialized moths or butterflies or something that lives on them.
Right. If you just take the butterflies and moths, according to, you know, Ptolemy and all those charts, in Middle Tennessee, it supports 49 different species of Lepidoptera. So the butterfly and moth moms are looking for hackberries when it's time to lay eggs.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And those moths are what the birds eat when it's time to have bird babies.
Absolutely. Right? Primarily, that is what they need to feed their babies. The babies cannot eat seeds.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this is the kind of thing that you will encounter when you take on This Is How a Robin Drinks, this wonderful new book. It's full of all those kinds of stories about nature. The other thing, too, I would observe about the book is that it reveals a bunch of things about you, Joe, about your life and circumstances that, as a friend of yours, I've known you for several years, I knew some of those things, but not all of them. You talk about issues with migraine headaches, for example, and you talk about your Jewish religious background and those sorts of things. Tell us how those things weave themselves into the book and why you wanted to share those things with the with the wide, wide world. It's a choice that you made, certainly.
It was a choice of what to reveal and how much, because my favorite kind of nature writing to read is a blend of personal, you know, personal like storytelling. But what I don't like to read is too much about the author. So there's a fine line there. I want to say, I want every essay to say, look at this, not look at me. But it is, it's a tricky line, and I tried to walk it. It was important to at least refer obliquely to the fact that I've got a disability, because I want everyone to believe that nature is for everyone and that we can access it however we can, but it is for everybody. And I can't always get outside and enjoy even what's in my backyard, but I can, it's still a crucial part of staying alive.
I wonder if you've had have had any feedback from readers that point to that question, or that or that people who have picked up on those observations.
I've heard from a few people, yeah, that have had disabling migraines, and it was, I'm so sorry for them, but it's right. Just nice to be able to connect over that, like, oh, yeah, me too, oh my gosh. You know, it's nature is our therapy and much, much, much more, right. But sometimes all we need is therapy. There's no other level. We have to be well enough in order to really enjoy and learn and share.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say to the listeners, get out there at this time of the year. This is a great Christmas present. My wife and I have picked up several copies that Jo's going to endorse, hopefully, before she leaves us here, for Christmas presents, and it would be a great thing. And I would wholeheartedly encourage you to get out there and do that.
Ooh, can I give a shout out to where I know it's on sale right now?
Oh, yeah, please do.
Wonder Gift and Garden in Kingston Springs.
Right.
It's a great nursery and gift shop. And this is weird to say, but I swear it's the best bathroom in town. You got to go see the loo.
Okay.
But they're carrying the book now, and I'm so excited to be part of Wonder.
Very good. You know, we were in Cincinnati for Thanksgiving, and Joseph Beth's bookstore in Cincinnati had the book.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I was thrilled to see. So many of your essays are derived from your observations that have taken place at city parks or state parks. And I wanted to hear from you about the role that those parks play, and just have you talk about the vital role of those parks.
Yeah, you said it, vital role.
Yeah.
Warner Parks in particular, that was my starter park way back when the kids were little, and I can't praise them enough. The Nature Center, the programs they had, the naturalists there, really changed everything. And then, after years and years, little by little, other parks came online for me, including little pocket parks nearby that I had just, you know, there were green spaces, but they're parks, and they also play a role. I can't drive by without stopping and checking on the status of this or that. I want to make things better. Ooh, doesn't that English ivy vine need to come off that elm tree? You know, I can't stop trying to edit and making things better because I'm so grateful to have those spaces. Ooh, and a new one. Okay, I belong to this great gardening club, and you do too, called Second Sunday Gardeners. And they and the nearby neighborhood association and our metro commissioner for beautification and environment and the Tennessee Environmental Council all got together and created this new Metro Pocket Park, created a 1,000 square foot pollinator patch. And that was just the beginning. I don't know if you've been over there lately,
Not lately, but I've been over there several times.
Well, The pollinator patch, so-called, keeps getting bigger and bigger. Uh-huh. And now there's a beautiful cedar arbor and a cedar bench, and there's a food forest, which we keep having weed wrangles for and planting new shrubs and trees and ground covers. It's kind of a little miracle right there.
And you're referring to the Portland Avenue Pocket Park, I guess is what it's formally called.
Right.
Right near Hillsborough Village.
Yes.
You blink
and you miss it.
Right. It's. I would have thought that it was just sort of part of an intersection.
Right. Right?
It's just a little side piece along the side of the road. And it had been sort of let grown in weeds for many years. And that gardening club has gotten in there with other volunteers and cleaned up a bunch of honeysuckle bushes and privet hedge.
So
and,
much, yeah.
Yeah.
We had official weed wrangles there, yeah.
Right. And I observed, too, that they also have some fruit trees.
Those fruit trees right at 21st Avenue, they've been there maybe 10 years. They were planted by a previous wave of interest and energy, and they were in decline. So we've been able to add some, including pawpaw trees. Yay.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, good, good. So you are the host, I guess is the best word for it, for an Instagram and blog called Sidewalk Nature.
Yeah.
And I know that you have had a couple features in Sidewalk Nature that I want to talk a little bit about because they do relate to this business of local parks and how they support nature.
Okay.
One that comes to mind has to do with the Nashville mustard.
Yeah.
So tell us about the Nashville mustard and for the, and I'm, I guess we're seeing it or we have seen it at, Fort Negley. And at Elmington Park.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, tell us about the Nashville mustard, first of all. Then we'll talk about park maintenance practices and, and the effect of those practices on this cool little plant.
All right. Well, one of my neighborhood parks, part of our daily life, is Elmington Park on West End Avenue. And every early spring, we drive by and see this blush of bright yellow in the grass. And I thought it was buttercup, you know, the kind of buttercup that grows in pasture. It's exotic and horses can't eat it. But on closer inspection, it wasn't. It was Nashville mustard, Paisonia lescurii, or a bladder pod. It's in the brassica family. Okay, so big deal. It's cute, whatever. But again, reading further, it is part of our lost grasslands. It's a species that still shows up from time to time in certain areas, and in some more than others. You mentioned Fort Negley. That is our super bloom. A couple of years ago, I had to just weep in the car. It was so beautiful. I mean, the entire front lawn was vivid yellow. There are a few other places it pops up at Sevier Park, St. Bernard's Park, again on 21st Avenue, and the Reservoir Park, close to Fort Negley, the big 8th Avenue Reservoir. And then there are interesting little pockets along certain highway interchanges. And anyway, people, it was so great. I put out the call, like, where are you seeing Nashville mustard? And people would email and tell me, it'd give me coordinates. So I'm collecting those. Also at Centennial Park.
Okay.
Yeah. So the reason why it's so special is this is one of those species that was prevalent back before we were here. Back when this was a grassland, the Central Basin was a grassland, or, you know, oak savannas. So this was part of that. And most of those species are gone, disappeared, but that one remains. Why? Because it can thrive with disturbance. So back in the day, that disturbance would have been fires set by indigenous people or lightning, but also bison hooves and bison wallows. So what do we have now that's disturbance? Crops. There are certain crops that people can plant that the timing fits in with the timing for the mustard, and both can thrive.
And this is a plant that only really occurs in Tennessee?
Yeah, I left that out. The historical records are 10 counties. But those are dwindling, and all the known pockets are disappearing. And a friend of mine who works in conservation told me that it's not rare now, but it will be.
Okay, so that's a cool little plant that people should observe in the springtime, April, May.
Actually, period. Before that. Can start late February, depending on the weather, but it usually starts in late February, and March is the prime time.
All right, so Nashville people, if you're out and about and you see this yellow plant in the grass, so to speak, be aware that that's kind of a rare plant that's growing in our city park.
Right.
Now, tell us about park maintenance and what that has to do with having this plant.
Well, over the years, we noticed that beautiful blush in Elmington Park was getting smaller and smaller and fainter and fainter. And it was because, I'm sure, of the mowing schedule. The plant, if it gets cut down before it can bloom and set seed, it's not going to be able to reproduce no matter how many seeds are in the seed bank. And so I talked with someone from Metro Parks who listened to me. And long story short, we got the mowing schedules changed for these particular populations. And it's a test. Like, we don't know, is giving it time enough to bloom and set seed going to mean the patches are bigger every year? Or does that mean there's more competition with other plants that are growing while those aren't getting mown too? Because there's some invasives in there. You know, there's like a henbit and dead nettle that are okay in the yard, but are they now going to outcompete the mustard? There's so many questions we don't know the answer to, but it's a great start.
Absolutely. Okay, so you were, I guess, successful in intervening with the park maintenance folks.
Yeah, and I got permission to collect the seeds too on certain areas. So okay. I collected seeds at the right time, which was a lot later than I thought. And with the Wild Ones of Middle Tennessee chapter, we did this little trial program, and people could sign up. Yes, I would like to try to grow these seeds at home and report back how it goes. So we have several people doing that.
How's it going?
Well,
we don't know yet.
We don't know yet, but I've had some big surprises.
Okay.
Yeah, because this is a winter annual. So the seeds fall in like April, May, and they're not expected to germinate until summer, early fall. They overwinter as this little basil rosette, and then boom, fluff up in late February. Right. That's what I was expecting. That is not necessarily what I've seen so far.
So not a perennial plant.
No, it's just winter annual, like chickweed,
itself.
But native.
Right,
yeah.
Right. So it's so interesting. So what's the lesson if you are out there on the landscape and you're a park and recreation director in Podunk, Tennessee, one of our 95 Podunks, you know, we have those around Tennessee. What's the lesson in that for that director or the park or park superintendent to take away from this one little example of this Nashville plant?
I wish they could look around. You know, one of the first things I ever did at Warner Park Nature Center so long ago was take a wildflower walk with Deb Beasley, who is now retired. Right. And we would always start, I went on several after that, we would always start in the front lawn, just the lawn where they mow. And I was shocked at how many species of things were there and how many were native. So if someone in charge of a park was able to do that and to see what was there, then they'd know what they'd be killing with, you know, the applications of herbicides and pesticides and fertilizers that no one needs, and with the mowing schedules and, oh my gosh, the blowing schedules. So I would wish for them to look around and know what they have and how to save the good stuff.
Right. You know, our local park and recreation directors and the people that manage our state parks have very good training in some regards.
Yeah.
But many though have no training in the naturalist field. I don't know if that.
Yeah.
In the biology of nature, so to speak. They have to rely on others to give them information about that. And my experience is that they're quite willing to listen to others
yeah.
if there's others out there willing to share. So are there resources that a local park and recreation director in a small city or county in Tennessee can call upon? I'm going to suggest to you that that people like yourself are resources for them.
And that's the first thought that came into my mind was, you know, we're getting more and more Tennessee Naturalist that's programs it. Across the state. We just signed up Beeman Park, and there's another one on the way. So if all those students, they need volunteer hours, and some of them are on fire with their native habitat, they would be ideal resources.
All right. Let's talk. And I know we've got several groups and things that you're involved with that we want to talk about and highlight in our talk today. Let's talk about the Tennessee Naturalist Program and let's introduce our audience to that and what it is. Tell us about that.
Wow. Well, I'm not on the board or anything, but I credit them for a major life change for me.
Okay.
They started, I think it was in 2010, with the very first chapter in Owls Hill. That's in Brentwood, Tennessee, right outside Nashville. It was patterned on the Master Gardener Program. We don't call it a Master Naturalist Program, but that's basically what it is. There are classroom hours, field hours, and volunteer hours. I think it takes, 9 or 10 months to get it all under your belt and then to get your volunteer hours. And then you are a certified Tennessee naturalist.
What are the kinds of things that they introduce you to? If you were to sign up for that program, what would you be learning about?
Oh, well, everything ideally. And I have seen those study guides and they are really good. So, you know, geology, that's everything starts with geology, and then forbs, plants and mammals and birds and living waters. And they try to fit everything in. And I think they do a good job.
Right. Insects and
invertebrates. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So there are several of those programs around Tennessee.
Yes.
Now, tell us, do you know where they are?
I can't remember where the other ones are. Are there 15 now? I hate to say the wrong number.
There's a bunch. And there's a website people can get on.
Right.
Tennessee Naturalists.
Yes.
That's where you got your training.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I had looked for something for years, and the closest thing was in the Smoky Mountains, and I could just never get there.
At Tremont.
Tremont, that. Yes, yeah, that was the place of my dreams. And then I heard that this naturalist program was coming. I was too late to get in on the first year, but I got in into the second year.
And you did the one at Owls Hill.
Right.
Okay. And they're about to start one at Beeman Park.
Right.
I know there's one at Cumberland Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And
the one at Cedars has moved now to Long Hunter State Park.
Okay. And then there's one in West Tennessee. I'm not sure whether it's at Natchez Trace Park or Union City, Tennessee. Anyway, they're spread around the state.
Yeah.
And so there's opportunities for citizens to learn more about nature and perhaps to interface with their local park and recreation people.
It's open to everyone. And it's great to see a wide variety of backgrounds with these people. Some work with nonprofits, some are just interested grown-ups.
Right. And if you're a local park and recreation director, seek them out. Seek those people out so that they can give you information about what you're growing in your little city park that you might not be aware of.
To keep our certification, we still have to volunteer 40 hours a year. So, we need those volunteer hours. We want to put them to good use.
That's a lot. Yeah. Now, Joanna, you are involved with numerous groups that have to do with nature and particularly botany in Tennessee. One of which is the Tennessee Native Plant Society.
Yeah.
Tell us about that group and what your involvement is there and what they do.
Well, honestly, I'm just an enthusiastic bystander for the most part. I cheer them on. I do some of their social media. I started that for them way back. They didn't have any presence online. So once you're in, you're in. But I've organized a couple of field trips, but mostly I just try to go on them.
So tell us what is the Native Plant Society? What's their focus? And obviously native plants, but tell us more.
Native plants, the study of, appreciation of, learning about them, trying to conserve them. They've been around since 1978, I think, and they have such a good field guide to wildflowers.
Tell us more. What is that?
Wildflowers of Tennessee. Okay. I mean, you can't beat it. It's the best one. I have to have them all, but that is still the best one.
Okay, excellent. So what other groups are you involved with concerning nature and
Mostly Wild Ones of Middle Tennessee.
Okay.
I'm so grateful to have Wild Ones here with a local chapter, and I volunteer with them. They do great outreach. They've got those plant sales, but just the community that they've been building has been invaluable.
Their goal is to bring wildness to people's yards.
You know, the organization used to have this great motto. It was saving the earth one yard at a time, and they changed it. I don't know why. I love that motto. That's what it was all about, which ties in with Homegrown National Park, that organization. Same thing. Your little patch can change everything.
That's an important message.
Yeah.
And then there's another program, and we had the Davidson County official involved with this program as a guest on this program some time ago, and that's the Tennessee Smart Yards program.
Smart Yards, another great thing. We need to push that out. We don't have enough Smart Yards in town.
Well, tell us, you know, what should the average citizen be thinking about when they think about their yard and how they manage it?
Well, honestly, so Homegrown National Park has this list, this 10 things you can do to help save biodiversity on your own property. And that's awfully handy to have a checklist.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. You don't even have to do them all. Just start with one.
Right.
I think that's a nice low bar to start with. Also, the Tennessee Smart Yards program, I think that's a pretty low bar. It's very welcoming. The yardstick they use, so-called yardstick. Mm-hmm. There's so many choices. You invariably already can check some off without doing anything. But speaking of doing anything, I think the easiest thing is to not do anything, to stop with the tidiness and the maintaining until you figure out what it is you're doing.
I think that's good advice. And what I thought you were going to say when you said stop doing was stop adding fertilizer, pesticides, herbicides.
And mosquito spray, yeah. If you stop those things, you'll save money and so many lives and time, your own time too.
Right. You know, and it's not that yards don't need to be managed. They do need to be managed.
Oh, right, yeah.
Particularly if you've got, like most yards in Middle Tennessee, you have invasive exotic plants in your yard.
We all do.
And I work hard at mine and still see English ivy coming up. I still see euonymus vine coming up. So yards need to be managed, but they need some thoughtfulness involved with that.
Thoughtfulness, yeah.
And people becoming aware of what they're looking at. Are people blind to what they see when they walk in the woods?
Well, yeah. And when they walk in their yard, plant blindness is still a big thing. And some of us interpret anything green as good. I mean, that's kind of what we're taught.
Right.
But yeah, so how to get that word out that not all plants really need to be here, or just how a particular plant plays in its community, how it fits in, how does it function? That changes everything once you know.
Excellent. Well, Joanna, thank you so much for being with me today. I'll give you another opportunity to plug your book, This Is How a Robin Drinks. I guess you can get it at Amazon or most bookstores here in Nashville. And you were talking about a shop out in along Highway 70.
Wherever Kingston Springs, I've been there. I can't remember the highway
Springs
number, but
right.
Yeah. So locally, you can get it at Parnassus and the bookshop and Wonder, but any of the big online outlets carry it too. And it's called "This Is How a Robin Drinks: Essays on Urban Nature."
Excellent. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
All right.